you can actually, by changing the ratios of these compounds, focus in on either more stimulating effects and focusing effects, or more sedative effects or calming and blissful effects. By changing the ratios of the antidepressive to anticonvulsant and antipsychotic compounds in there.
So essentially, this touches on the element that if you tune it correctly, people can essentially choose their own moods, per se, and that's what you're saying. Welcome to this episode of the MedTech 101 podcast, and this is the first time we talk about a pharmaceutical drug. I know it's taken more than 30 episodes to get to this point in time, and I promised to talk about that. So today we've got two exciting guests here on the podcast. We've got Nate and we've got Wayne, and these two are basically teaming up together to start something that will be helping a lot of people. But this particular herb or drug, as you may want to call it, is still essentially new to the Western world, but it's been around in South Africa for a very long time. In fact, going back centuries, being used by certain tribes in South Africa. And that's what made it quite interesting for me, because I grew up in South Africa. I lived in South Africa for about 8 years, and I never knew about this. So this was quite a good learning curve for me as well, preparing for this. And so without really delaying any further, welcome to the MedTech 101 podcast, and thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having us, Rodney. It's a pleasure to be here.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Just to give the audience a bit of a quick background, you know, just we'll start with you, Nate. I know, Nate, you were like a sort of like a massage therapist in the army. You served some time. And whilst you're serving, you encountered quite a lot of things that you saw there that potentially might have helped you get the motivation to start, Disruptor Labs. But looking at your background, Nate, what would you tell us roughly to the audience in addition to what I've already said?
Yeah, I can share that I did a 4-year stint in the U.S. military. I served as an infantryman. I did a couple trips to Afghanistan. Part of my time there, I'd been injured, just training accident, right? Nothing crazy. I fell off a hill. But I had this nagging injury that kind of guided me in the direction of pursuing health and well-being all around. And so after getting out of the military, that was what kind of guided my interest in massage therapy or physical therapy. And so I pursued that. And then from there, that world led me into pursuing mental health and how mental and physical health become intertwined. And in even more recent years, I've had some severe issues with mold toxicity. And so just all of those things kind of combined have been an impactful elements of my journey and just exploration of health and well-being in general, and how these ideas of physical health, mental health, emotional, spiritual well-being, all of those are very much so intertwined.
Nice. That's really nice to hear. And I think it's always good to speak to people who have served in the army, Nate. So thank you. The second person who I've brought on the podcast who has served in the army. And I always find guys who have served time to have a certain sort of regimen, way of doing things. And it's quite nice to see how you've been able to connect some of those dots leading up to this point. And so then we'll go to Wayne. Wayne is a medicinal chemist, but Wayne fought off cancer as well. So you're a cancer survivor, so which is quite amazing. And I personally spent a lot of time, working on actually just developing a medical device that prevents some side effects of chemotherapy. So I know what it's like, but Wayne, what would you want to say to the audience just to let them know about your background leading up to Disruptor Labs?
Thanks for the introduction, Rodney. And thanks as well for your compression device, that cryogenic compression device that prevents peripheral neuropathy. That's a huge thing that comes up during chemotherapy, certainly arose for me. As a chemist in the field, working in graduate school and also in some internships at some laboratories that weren't, appropriately situated for safety and for prevention of chemical exposure. As you mentioned, yeah, I did spend about 2 years in immunosuppressive chemotherapy fighting off not cancer, but something very similar, very severe aplastic anemia, a disease where essentially all of my bone marrow just all at once died. And this process of medical isolation and, you know, rebuilding my immune system from scratch, having to balance immunosuppressive chemotherapy, daily injectable experimental pharmaceuticals, hours of magnesium infusions to counterbalance what was going on, really focused my attention on the importance of integrative health, like Nate mentioned, the balance between mood, behavior, diet that makes a person have well-being. And this brought me, after, you know, 2 years of recovery and a bone marrow transplant, to working for the first medical cannabis company in the world, based out of Israel, Tikkun Olam, as they were expanding into the USA. And pretty shortly afterwards, within a couple of years, I had founded my own consulting company to expand my reach. Since then, the company has been consulting all over the world. But really, the focus that I found as psychedelics and cannabis were maturing as an industry, where there were these huge gaps in the way that these industries were able to impact the public. And a lot of those gaps come down to accessibility. And we'll get more into that later. But that's basically been my story, you know, as a medicinal chemist informed by a health challenge, who's now attempting to bring some insight and some support to the world.
Nice. That's really nice to hear, because one thing you say there sounds like a sort of like a holistic approach to medicine, which is something that has sort of become like a foregone story. And we people tend to treat things in isolation right now. But what you're basically saying is, you know, trying to treat the whole body as a one whole system instead. And it's like going back in time, is it? Because now modern medicine isn't really holistic medicine, is it? So that's quite nice. And today, like, you know, I'm quite excited to talk about Canna, which is the herb or the psychedelic which we're going to be talking about today, because this herb has existed for thousands and thousands of years. I wonder, why exactly is it not popular? But before we even get to Canna, like, what made you guys decide to start Disruptor Labs? Because I know you're a new startup right now, and how big are you guys? What are your plans, and what was the motivation behind starting the lab?
Sure. I mean, that goes back to how Nate and I first met. We actually came together in 2017 after beginning specialization in our individual fields, working on an art project. There was a friend of ours in the Bay, where we were living at the time in California, that was building a custom designed pair of million volt Tesla coils that were musical to the world, 35 feet tall. And yes, our devotion to that project, volunteering our time, is what brought us together. You may be familiar with who I'm speaking yes. about. I can see a look of familiarity on your face. Yeah, immediate recognition.
Tori Smith, guys, for those guys who are listening on the podcast right now, they're basically talking about the CEO of Indiatix. I had these guys a couple of weeks ago, I released the episode a couple of weeks ago, and there was also the connection link, you know, between they recommended you guys to come on the podcast. So I'm really grateful for that, and I'm happy to hear that. So yeah, no, that's good. It's good to hear that, you know, there's something special about Silicon Valley. It's like someone knows someone, and everyone is trying to build something. So I'm probably living in the wrong part of the world. I need to move to California at some point.
Hey, I think you're exactly where you need to be, and so are we. Thanks for so much for having us on the podcast. It's an honor. But you're certainly right. You know, that motivation to build something special together is really what binds in my life the best relationships to my life, and that's how Nate and I met. You know, a few years later, you know, we've been specializing in our individual fields, and we synced back up at a few different industry conferences for alternative healing, and just got down to discussing what we've learned, you know, since we first met each other. And that's where the idea for Disruptor Labs came from. The opportunity that we see in presenting education on holistic health options to the world, while at the same time presenting a product, which, by the way, we're not making any medical claims. You know, this is a supplement product. I have to be very clear on that. But as you're discussing with, you know, Kana's potential medicinally and the over 40 years of clinical research on some of these ingredients, there's a lot of promise that we're very excited about.
Nice. And no, that's really good. And just a quick question then. I mean, with you guys having started, the two of you right now, do you guys have like plants somewhere else, or do you have labs that you're actually working to extract this? And if for people listening right now, what would you say, where are your labs located? What markets are you guys in so far, et cetera?
Sure. I mean, we're in really early stages right now. We have formulation set up. We have manufacturing set up. We are just sort of premiering here. There's a lot of different options for Kana on the market, but the quality and the reciprocity and the framework of integration for the product that we're offering, we believe is going to offer individuals who are either naive to the process of using psychoactives or very familiar the best chance at getting the best benefit out of it. There's a big emphasis on, you know, psychoactivity just as a general focus, but you know, these peak state experiences that are super inspirational, as Nate always says, are the lightning strike that illuminates the path on the mountain. The path still needs to be walked. And walking that path with consistency takes an integrative process, not just a psychoactive, but behaviors, community, and support.
Nice. And that's really good.
Could I just throw in a quick little addition to that with the term psychoactive and psychedelic? Whereas a psychedelic is something that can alter our perception, and that's when we start to get into the realm of hallucinogens, whereas a psychoactive is something that can modulate our experience. So, for example, like coffee is, or caffeine rather, is psychoactive. And so, similarly, Kana is psychoactive. It is not by any means psychedelic.
True. And also one thing to add there, it's also not a hallucinogenic as well, because some people confuse some people confuse what a hallucinogenic is and what a sort of like a psychedelic is. So I don't know if you guys also want to expand on those people listening right now, so they also know the difference, that to know that Kana is not a hallucinogenic.
Exactly. Yeah. We just wanted to make it very clear that we're not talking about using hallucinogenics and psychedelics on a daily basis. You know, that's just a different conversation. And so Kana is mildly psychoactive. And so if somebody were to take Kana looking for that psychedelic experience, they would probably be severely disappointed. If that's what you want, there's other places to go for that. That's just not what we have here.
Thank you.
The interesting thing, though, there is, you know, the subtleties between psychoactivity and psychedelia, right? When we're talking about, like, what receptor systems each of these compounds interact with, you know, Kana, mesembrine, mesembrinone, delta-7, mesembrinone, all of these compounds focus in on anti-inflammatory effects, antioxidant effects, and affect serotonin. These are really similar to what we see in both antidepressants and in psychedelics. They affect different types of serotonin receptors. But in general, the ability to affect serotonin is going to have some impact very likely on mood, on cognition, and even on digestion and on heart function and immune function. There's a beautiful sort of balance, I feel, especially for individuals who are naive or refractory, maybe avoiding a peak state experience, to get access to some sample of psychoactivity that's also beneficial for their physical health without having to spend, you know, 8 hours or multiple weeks integrating, or, you know, have a very severe or challenging experience. So it's a unique opportunity for, you know, as we were saying, both seasoned psychedelic users and people who are completely naive to using psychedelics to experience something wholesome and support their wellness.
Thank you very much for getting the basic definitions out of the way, because for people out there, probably getting any chances of confusion is probably reduced now, because part of this podcast is to try to introduce sort of like these new technologies, this new technology or new pharmaceutical agents or ingredients or drugs that are new on the markets, and also ones that are starting to be popular to a general audience in a comprehensive way. So, and then leading on to exactly what we're actually talking about, this plant, Kana, like, what exactly is Kana, or how would you guys describe the plant to people listening?
A succulent. Yeah, we describe it as a succulent. Scalidium tortosum, if I'm not butchering that name, is the technical species name. There's a lot of different subtypes, as far as I'm aware. Grows wild in southern Africa. And as you said, it has been used very likely for thousands, if not tens of thousands of years, like since we can basically trace back recorded history. The first recorded use of it was, I believe, around 400 years ago through explorers in the area. But culturally, this is an extremely significant plant. What's interesting about Kana is, I think, very similar to cannabis. There's a huge range of molecules that are expressed depending on the type of Kana that you get. There's a very different profile of active compounds that may be within it. We've been discussing, it's not a new plant, and it's been around for a while. And even the trade of Kana and the extraction of Kana is not a new trade necessarily. Zembrin, which is a commercial extract that's pharmaceutically available in South Africa, is a Kana extract, which is prescribed for antidepressive and anxiolytic properties to fight anxiety and stress. But what's interesting about, you know, just trying to find the plant wild is, without determining what's in it, with those compounds, we can't really determine its effect. So if we're going to create a Kana product, lab testing, determining exactly what compounds are in there and which ratios, are going to be central to being able to say, hey, this Kana is going to feel this way, and this Kana extract is going to feel another way.
True. Now, that's interesting you say that, because as I understood, it's been used by the Khoisan tribes, actually, particularly who live in the southern part of Africa, close to where I'm from, and where I grew up. And I think it's quite interesting, because these people, or these tribes, use it for quite a lot of stuff. And when I was doing pre-research leading up to this, I also found out they use it for even when a baby is crying, to help a baby go to sleep and everything. So it's like, it's quite integral to them. And they live in this harsh environment, for people who don't know. They live in the nomads, who live in, it's like, harsh climates where there's very little rainfall. And they've been able to live there for thousands of years, where other tribes normally would have struggled to live there. So, and then you mentioned something quite interesting, because in Kana, there's alkaloids, but like, alkaloids, what makes people feel good, right? If I'm wrong, but correct me if I'm wrong, Nate, but how would you describe, like, the alkaloid ingredients which you were speaking about right now, which are the key active ingredients, such as mesembrine and mesmembrinone? And I know all these words, like, how would you basically break it down for us to say what exactly are all these alkaloids, and what do they do to us, and why do people seek them when you processing it? Yeah.
By the way, Rodney, thank you for bringing up, obviously, the Khoisan people. But more on, you know, the integration of respecting the roots of this plant in a moment. But to answer your question, mesembrine is the compound that is focused on for its antidepressive potential. Delta-7 mesembrinone is more of an antipsychotic. And I believe that mesembrinone is used for its anticonvulsive potential as well. The combination of these compounds together in different ratios creates different effects. So there's interesting, you know, differences between a compound that is, or rather an extract that only contains mesembrine versus an extract that contains ratios of mesembrine to delta-7 to mesembrinone. You can actually, by changing the ratios of these compounds, focus in on either more stimulating effects and focusing effects, or more sedative effects or calming and blissful effects, by changing the ratios of the antidepressive to anticonvulsant and antipsychotic compounds in there. This is very similar to, as we were referring to before, the different ratios of cannabinoids and terpenes in cannabis, and how even though there's, you know, the same compounds in there in different ratios, they have completely different effects.
Well, and it's quite interesting you say that, because Just to even simplify it further, convulsions are basically like what seizures, essentially, right? What people find in epilepsy, you know, like epileptic fits, etc. So this basically has a pharmaceutical application for those people actually, you know, suffering from that sort of like illness or conditions. And you also say that it also has the ability to increase serotonin, which essentially is, or dopamine, which essentially means to increase people's moods. And this could be leading from like dealing with depression, etc., things that affect people. So essentially, this touches on the element that if you tune it correctly, people can essentially choose their own moods, per se, and that's what you're saying.
Precisely. That agency to influence both our physical health and our mental health is really close to both Nate and I's heart. That the ability to choose, the agency to be able to influence yourself in that way is often not granted by the circumstances that are imposed upon us wherever we're living. And what's beautiful about Kana and plants similar to it and some of the blends that we've come up with in these products is that we think that it's going to offer an opportunity for wellness to support integrative health that most people probably don't get offered by most products. And again, we're not making any medical claims here whatsoever. You know, it's not within our rights to do so, selling a supplement product. But we are inspired by the potential of these ingredients and the decades of clinical research behind them.
Nice. And sorry, I tend to just write down notes as things are said, so that I don't forget something when I ask a question. I know you say that you're not making medical claims, and I just want to emphasize why that's important for some people who might not understand why. Because particularly when you work with the FDA or when you work with any regulatory board for your medical device product, there's certain things that you're allowed to claim so that it's not classified as a pharmaceutical drug or a medical device. And there's certain things that you can say this is what it just does. So then it's classified as sort of like a herbal product, as if you're just getting like your tea or your rooibos tea. It's not really saying that it's going to cure your cancer, but it will say that it's got maybe antioxidants. And you know that if there's oxygen, it's probably going to fight cancer. So and this is good. This is a good strategy in terms of people who are listening right now, while you look at a new product that they want to bring to market, that essentially we're trying to reduce the number of paperwork. And at the same time, also just, you know, actually just being honest to say, you know, this is just a herbal product that we have and people are using. Whether you want to use it, it's okay, but it might work for you, it might not work for you depending on this, but this is what it does to your brain. So yeah, I just wanted to expand a little bit on that so people understand why you say that you're not making any medicinal claims. It's for a reason. It's not just because you guys are lazy or anything like that. So, it's important to get that out of the way. So, and then talking about like the mass production, because as part of the research that I was doing leading up to this, the actual plant that was actually being found in Kana land, what they call it, in that part of South Africa where it grows, because the plant is very sensitive to, you know, weather conditions, and et cetera, humidity and everything. So it's really hard to cultivate outside of those, outside of its natural environment. So, but people have obviously built labs and tried to simulate conditions of that environment, etc. But because the plant was only found in that part of the world, it made mass production quite difficult. And then this leads to the next point, which we're going to be touching on regarding, you know, the new extracts that have started to form, particularly DV17, Kana, I think that's what it's called. What could you tell us about that?
So as we were mentioning before, the type of Kana that is cultivated determines the compounds that are in the extract. The Kana that we use is actually sourced from ethically cultivated and vertically integrated operations that have reciprocity built in for the Khoisan people. And in addition to using environmentally friendly cultivation practices that, although they're not organic certified, are as close to organic certification as possible. And in addition, the extraction methods, which are, you know, generally just ethanolic extract, you know, solvent, ethanol, soaking, filtering, and then spraying on a sugar matrix, like some sort of dextrose, That's both the, I believe, the commercial extract for Zembrin and these other operations that are coming up, what they're using. What's essential, though, in any kana extraction operation, again, is the control over the cultivation, ensuring that it's not harming the environment, and the control over the lab testing at the end, ensuring that the compounds that you believe are in the extract are in there and in the ratios that you want them to be to get the effect that is necessary. There's a lot of different kana out there in the world. A lot of it for, you know, varying prices from different vendors. And the difficulty is assuring quality and safety. And what we lay our hats on is the reciprocity, the safety, the environmental consideration, and the lab testing with the vendors that we use for kana, which ensure on multiple levels that the people using the kana are safe, that we know what is in it, and that the environment and the cultures that support this plant coming to the world aren't being harmed by the commercialization of it.
Well, that's nice to hear that, you know, there's something in for the San people, because as I said, like the San people generally live in quite remote places in South Africa. They've sort of maintained their culture, they've maintained their way of life. And for anyone who wants to visit this part of the world, I recommend you to, you know, visit the, you know, the Kalahari Desert, the Namib Desert. That's where potentially they will be. And if you get to go and see on how they live, how they're able to use a very sort of like a minimalistic approach to life. They use everything is quite communal. I like how the culture is the way of the culture is kind of set up. It's quite nice, and even how they do the hunting and how they kind of grateful to the environment before they eat. I think they just give thanks to the animal. It's quite nice. It's quite a nice a way to see life, especially nowadays when people are, you know, turning vegan for all kinds of ethical reasons behind animals being killed, and how they've maintained, you know, their diet shows the respect, which I think which will even please people who are vegans or vegetarians now. But nonetheless, coming back to what you're talking about regarding like how you guys are helping these people, I was actually going to speak on this point later on, because I think it's quite essential to have like a good business model that looks after people as well. So then it just brings me to the question regarding the extras that you spoke about, which I wanted to also talk about here, because I spent some time reading about this, and I'm quite excited to be able to share what I've learned and also to learn new things. But one thing that I learned is that even when they do the extractions in the labs, the most difficult thing for most companies is for them to, because out of the three alkaloids we spoke about today, which maybe people use as markers, you know, the mesmembrane, like the people struggle to keep them stable after they've been extracted, even though it's quite easy. So I know it's probably quite confidential information for you guys, but would you say like you got a way that you're working around keeping the, you know, the alkaloids in the extras stable long enough afterwards, so people can actually have the right dosage and everything together combined?
Absolutely. The shelf stability starts with the kana extract manufacturer. You know, the third-party laboratory testing and their shelf stability, along with the reciprocity built into their model and the vertical integration of their cultivation, give us a lot of assurance. In addition, the way that we package the kana individually in doses ensures that the dose is not exposed to air or to light or anything that might provide any sort of oxidative or damaging force. The difficulty, I think, with a lot of kana products is that they come in a tincture or in a liquid form. And anything in chemistry that's dissolved in a solvent is going to be more open to damage oxidatively or, you know, via exposure to light than something that's kept neat in a powder form and packaged away from light and heat. You know, long-term degradation studies on the, you know, our particular product have not been performed, but I have immense confidence that the way that it's packaged and the ingredients that are sourced to use it will ensure its long-term shelf stability.
Nice. That's really nice. And that's quite assuring, because I think most people, just like any consumer, You want to know that if you buy your product, it's going to have the dosage by the time you get home. You don't want something with like a half-life of like maybe half an hour or something, because that's like how some other, you know, when you start looking at nuclear medicine and everything like that, how that's how short some life form can be. So that's quite reassuring, and it's quite good knowing that, you know, there's a sort of like a standard. So has there been an industrial standard, sort of like a industry standard that everyone has to meet that you guys are adhering to, or it's still a new product? Because I understand right now, even though it's been around for like centuries, it's still new essentially to the West. Essentially, that's what you guys are doing. You're introducing kana to the West. So do you have like a standard sort of like benchmark for the industry at the moment? Something similar to the FDA, but maybe on a smaller scale?
Sure. The benchmarks that we're setting personally are both food safe and what we've seen respected in other similar industries, like the global psychedelic industry and the medical cannabis industry and the recreational cannabis industry here in the United States and beyond. Those standards are both, you know, food safe and reminiscent of pharmaceutical quality standards, but since they're not regulated by the FDA, are not strictly falling under their purview. They're as close as possible, and that's what we're upholding. Once again, you know, with the huge selection of kana products on the market trying to be introduced into the West, the stability and the long-term viability of these products, the safety of these products is of utmost importance. And designing this product from the ground up for safety and for benefit, maximal benefit, was our MO.
Nice. And yeah, sorry, speak, Nate.
I believe to your point, Rodney, that like this is just a new industry, or a very new, at least perceptually, to much of the Western world. This is just something that is novel. And so there hasn't quite been that time for those industry standards to be collectively developed. And so that's part of kind of like, I think what we're all going to be collectively working towards, folks that are within that health wellness, specifically with kana. And kind of like what you mentioned about the degradation, that's, I believe, part of the advantage of working with extracts and like the dry powdered version of the alkaloids. Whereas like working with a natural material, right, like there's just natural variation in the alkaloids, concentration, the ratios, which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's just, you get that fluctuation in effect and that variability there. Whereas with the concentrated alkaloids, we just have consistency in those alkaloids, and we can have a relatively consistent effect there.
Nice. Now that's really assuring. And talking about different grades and stuff, because as part of the, you know, reading leading up to this, it turns out there's like three grades. There's like the pharmaceutical grade, which is at the very top, and this like grown in labs, you know, controlled environments, you know, sealed off, you know, like all the lab conditions. And there's like the nutraceutical grade, which is like in the middle. And then there's like the, what they call the table grade, which is also then just like grown outside, you know, in sort of like per hectare, essentially. And this is quite important to differentiate between these two, because as up leading up and up, oh, sorry, I lost my tongue there.